You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
If you enter my mind for any reason, I will twist your head off and use it for a chamber pot. Are you going to arrest me, Garibaldi?
No way. I want to live to see the future.
Mr. Bonova, Mr. Shelf, anybody else? Shoot him.
We are star stuff. We are the universe made manifest, trying to figure itself out.
All of us was for nothing. Unless we go to the stars.
Boom. Sooner or later. Boom!
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3 podcast, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. This week, along with my good friends Dan and Sean, we will be talking about Season 1. A quick review of what we've seen over the last 26 weeks, is it, or something like that? It's taken a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a long road getting from there to here. Oh, wait, sorry, wrong show. Sorry.
We had faith of the heart. We knew we would get here.
That's it. That's right.
Boldly going, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course. Or going boldly, whichever.
Depends on the week, I guess.
So here we are, Season 1. So a quick overall thought. What did you think overall of Season 1? What were your first impressions when you first saw this show as a brand new show?
Well, I remember when it first came out back in, 94, me and my buddy Andrew were watching it, and we were like, this show has a great concept, but I don't think it's going to last more than 7 or 8 episodes. And sure enough, it ended up lasting 5 years and a bunch of movies and a partial spinoff, but it was something that was right up my alley. I loved it, but it had its slow plotting moments. The pacing in Season 1 was all wonky and all over the place. The acting for the most part was pretty great, but there was some spotty stuff. The visual effects have never bothered me. Like, that's one of the major complaints that most people have. Oh, it's the early CGI, but it doesn't take me out. It's just part of the charm as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the graphics of the time, of course, were being done by low powered computers, really, compared to what PCs were, but still powerful enough to create a TV show. It, like you say, it doesn't bother me either, because it looks a lot like a lot of the computer games of its time, which I was playing. So there'd be like Wing Commander and various games like that, which would try and use a lot of heavy graphics, but of course it would slow down the computers and they'd be a bit jolty and wouldn't look right. So again, it was of its time, and so it didn't bother me. Just like Star Trek, the original series.
Yeah, exactly.
It's of its time, and you give it a pass for that.
Yeah,
I have seen in looking through YouTube that somebody has actually taken the titles and beefed them up and put them into 4K, and it does look amazing. And if people are prepared to do that now for free, why the heck isn't this thing getting redone?
Last year HBO Max did remaster the entire Babylon 5 series.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I haven't seen it because I don't have HBO Max, but apparently that's a thing.
Oh, okay. Oh, well. Because it could be one of those things like Tron, when they beefed up Tron into 4K, and that did not work well at all because it showed up all of the inadequacies of the graphics of its time. So hopefully it won't spoil it too much, but they do look pretty nice when you see the station in full 4K. It looks pretty good. Dan, what did you think of Babylon 5 when you first saw it?
When I first saw it, as I remember saying when we first started, that there was this idea that there was this show that was already pre-written, that JMS had put together a 5-year arc, and he was going to start putting in like all these arcs and character stories and dropping in little nuggets of information that might become useful in season 2, season 3, and so forth. And watching the show at the time, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, the graphics don't bother me at all. I think it was one of the few sci-fi shows at the time that seemed to show realistic space movement. You know, the ships move in almost a Newtonian physics. There's a couple of iffy moments where it sort of does take a few liberties, but overall, the ships believably stop and halt and move in space. There's a believable aspect of space travel where they have to go to, is it sector 14, sector 13? I can't even remember. 14, where it takes hours to get there. It's not just instantly solved by hitting the warp button and off you go. You have to wait and you have to talk about buckling up your pants and trousers and whether you're going to do it, you know, buckle or zip first.
Fasten and zip. And
there was that believable aspect, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like. And of course, the ship, the space station itself rotates to create artificial gravity. And when you see shots of the corridors, they're all curved, you know, because that's the way the thing is. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, that's the thing that first caught my attention when I saw it was the attention to detail of the real physics.
Yeah, it's gritty and realistic. Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely. But finally, like, tuning in to season one and finally giving it its due and watching through when it, I think it was on Channel 4 at the time, it unfairly gets a lot of comparison to Deep Space Nine. And I feel like, you know, just because it's a space station in space and there were those behind the scenes rumors that, you know, scripts have been stolen and so forth. But Deep Space Nine was going into a ready-made universe. There was already TNG, there was already TOS. There was a lot of taffy pulling that it didn't need to do because we already knew what a Klingon was. We already knew what things were. We already knew what the Enterprise was and what Starfleet was. But Babylon 5 has to do it and hit the ground running. And it did. It gave us background on human affairs, Narn, Centauri. In single episodes, you're able to cover an entire culture and you get everything all thrown in with Malari giving just one speech. He tells you his backstory, what his culture is like, where it came from, and even a little joke about, you know, slip my wrists. Oh, you can't slip your wrist. It doesn't hurt you. It's all in there. You've got anatomy as well. You learn so much in one single character's monologue. And unfortunately, it does fall flat of that problem in sci-fi with the first season where you don't quite understand who the characters are. And sometimes you get some really stinker episodes where it kind of stops. And as Sean was saying, the plodding episode pace and it stops and you get TKO. Yes. You know, season ones are always very, very tough. But with what it was doing, with the high expectations that were coming with it, I think season one pulled off a belter. And there's very few episodes that I didn't enjoy and I would easily come back to. But I know there's so much better to come.
There is, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I when I saw this for the first time, I have come from you know, watching television right the way from, you know, the beginning of the 1970s, you know, right the way up through to, you know, the 90s when we were watching this. And most 90% of well, pretty much all of the shows that came out then were all episodic TV shows. Your Starsky and Hutches, your Kojaks, your Incredible Hulks. And, you know, it was very much one episode, move on, another episode, you know, you MacGyver's, you know, coming out, that sort of time as well. The A-Team and, you know, everything was just episode by episode. So when this came along, it was the same thing. It was an episodic show. You know, it started off the first half. We were meeting all the characters like you do. You know, everyone has a bit of a show so we can get a bit of a backstory. There wasn't any hint at the time because I hadn't read all of these stories or heard of this show. I knew it was about because I'd been to a convention and two of the stars were there. I didn't know who the hell they were. So they just sort of said, oh yeah, we've been doing this show for about a year now. And, oh right, okay, I haven't seen it. Oh, it's been on Sky, that's why I haven't seen it. So then it comes onto normal TV and eventually I get to watch it and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, this is good. And yeah, this is the typical sort of thing we like to watch. And it's not Star Trek. It's not Deep Space Nine, which again, I couldn't see because it was tucked away on Sky for a bit. So when I did come to watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I thought, this is being hampered by the fact it's Star Trek. It has to work in its own little sandbox. Whereas Babylon 5 comes along, it's got the whole universe to play with. Bring your own aliens in, do anything you want. You know, you don't have to have Klingons. You don't have to have Daleks. You don't have to have whatevers. You know, they've got their own, the whole, you know, any race you want to make. and you can do anything you like with it. And you've got your it's all based around the same planet, around the same area, but in the larger sector, you can bring in things and you can go out and visit things. And so even for a show that's based on a space station, it's amazing just how many different cultures they've brought in, and even explored the ship itself and the down below and all this type of thing. And then you've got the intrigue back on the Earth. So it was amazing to see all this. But then by the time you get halfway through the sort of first half of season one, it starts to move away from single episodes like TKO and Believers and Infection and all that sort of thing, and moves on to things like The Sky Full of Stars and Signs and Portents, Voice of the Wilderness, Babylon Squared. And suddenly you start to see this bigger picture emerging from this show, and little nods to the past as well as what could be in the future. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, this is not just a show by show thing. This is promising us more, not necessarily in this season, but in the next. So it was an incredible thing to watch the first time round. And I watched it the first time round, and because I wasn't really into watching shows deeply, I just watched them and saw what was given to me. I didn't think too much about it. I couldn't speak to anybody about it because I didn't really know anybody else who was interested in this type of science fiction. It's only when I bought the DVDs about 6 years ago and started watching them then that I started to go, oh, actually, this is a bit deeper than I thought. And now working it through with you guys, I'm going, oh, my God, I didn't even see any of this. This is just ridiculous. I'm now seeing it properly, which is great because I'm absolutely loving it even more now. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And I think at the early stage as well, you had this sort of, some of the characters they sort of arrived fully formed, despite some rough edges with makeup early on. But there was some that didn't quite work. I thought it took a little bit of time, but Garibaldi's one of my favorite characters. I absolutely love him. I love Jerry Doyle as well. But early on, you were thinking, are they trying to make him look a bit more Bruce Willis? Sort of Bruce Willis in his moonlighting days. Is he the hair was the same thing. And I think when he grew it a bit longer, they were trying to make him look like Bruce Willis. They're working on that, even though he's a lot taller and bigger. But, it was very, very strange. But Ivanova, she's quite straight. She's got a sense of humour, but it tends to be very aggressive and, she'll have a go at people in a funny way. But I think in season two, she's going to start developing more of a sense of humour. She's going to lighten up a bit. Got that to look forward to. Overall, as a first season of a show that could last a number, I don't think they did a bad job. I don't think there was, out of all of the characters, the main characters, I don't think there was a really bad one. There was some, maybe a couple of little, some of the early on with the Psycor members. I think they were a little bit rough at the edges, but I think overall, in the end, they get into it. But that always happens early on in a show, and you give that a bit of a pass and wait for the characters to develop and the actors to get to know each other and what have you. So. But yeah, I it's interesting to see, this is not the sort of Star Trek utopia. This is where we want to be. This is more, crime, poverty, corruption, prejudice. It's all still there. It's still happening on this, and it's not just happening between humans and aliens. It's aliens and aliens as well. So it's mm-hmm. it's the whole thing. So I think this show was more gritty and more realistic compared to Deep Space Nine. I'm not saying Deep Space Nine is bad by any means, but this it holds its own. It holds its own.
Yes. Yeah, the Babylon 5 holds a mirror up to reality, while Star Trek shows us what we would like to have.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah.
I think the frustrating thing is that we spend this entire season getting to know a really good commander, someone who has the diplomatic and the military aspect to both of his personality sides. And unfortunately, it doesn't carry through. We don't get to see where Sinclair would have gone. We don't really flesh that out on the big screen. I know in extended novels and comics that does actually get something, but it's a shame that we don't get to see Michael O'Hara come back more often, that they weren't able to bring him back for obvious reasons, because he just wasn't well enough to do so. But it's a shame that we spend so much time giving some great episodes to that character and never getting to have that payoff. And it adds a sort of almost realistic sadness to Babylon 5, that people do move on and aren't necessarily with us all the time, which is another believable aspect of Babylon 5, that if people do die and they don't always come back, that there is some finite endings for some characters.
That's right. And I didn't think, I thought Michael O'Hare was an amazing actor. I think he made this character his own. It was, and a great character as well. He would take no messing around from anybody. He could, he could be kind and gentle. He could be a father figure. He could be a good leader. And Michael O'Hare portrayed that all the way through. And it was just sad that he's sadly suffering from schizophrenia, and he couldn't carry on. Or he felt as though he couldn't carry on. And I think it did lead to a little bit of tension between him and some of the cast and crew, because he didn't tell anybody about it. And they just didn't understand. And I think maybe in that time, and maybe being the age he was, he didn't feel as though he wanted to share that, and he just wanted to deal with it himself. But had he opened up, I think a lot of people could have made a lot of room for him to sort of do it his own way, and helped him a bit. But sadly, that didn't happen. But I've read a few reports about him, saying he was very wooden and not very I didn't see that at all. I thought he was amazing right from the start. He was exactly what he should be, and his whole performance all the way through season one was really, really good.
He did a great job, but I do have to admit I like Sheridan a whole lot more.
But again, I mean, Sheridan is written as I don't want to use Star Trek again, but the archetype, he's kind of the Kirky kind of risk taker kind of commander, whereas Sheridan being the slightly more Picardish diplomatic side of things, that calm nature he had to him, I can see why people might thought that was wooden, but that a calm nature, he portrayed it more than well enough. And in episodes where he would break down, he lost his shizzle, shall I say.
Oh, yes.
He knew how to throw down a few times, and he really sort of brought out some of the anger and frustration that he sometimes felt as a commander as well.
Yeah, he played a competent leader in a difficult situation. He did great.
Yeah, that's right. So let's run through a few episodes, Sean. Sean, you've got a list there. You say you've got your favorite episodes, your worst episodes.
I do have a list. But before we get into my list, why don't we play a promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Hey, you know how you don't have any friends? It's fine.
The Flopcast will be your friend.
Your weird podcast friend.
Join us on the Flopcast every week for a silly conversation about cartoons, music,
comic books,
chickens,
and obscure 80s pop culture trivia that no one,
literally no one,
could possibly care about.
Find us at flopcast.net
and on the ESO Network.
It'll be our little secret.
And we're back. And Paul, you were asking me about the list that I had written down.
Correct. Yes. What have you got?
All right. Well, I just did a quick list, my five best episodes, my five worst episodes, and five decent but could be better episodes.
Okay.
So I didn't write any specific notes down about any of this stuff. I just looked at a list of season one and the quick synopsis of each one. And I'm like, these are the five best. These are the five worst. These are okay. So for my best ones, no particular order, I've got Babylon Squared, because, of course, we've got Zathras. Deathwalker was another great one.
Uh-huh.
I've got A Voice in the Wilderness. I just combined the both of those because it's a two-parter. I've got Signs and Portents, followed by Chrysalis.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, I don't know if that matches my spreadsheet that you have there of my top ones or not.
It does, yeah.
Really? Okay, well, good. That's not bad then. So for my five worst ones, in no particular order. I've got TKO, of course. I've got Believers. I've got Mind War, Infection, and Eyes.
Oh, yeah, Infection is your worst.
Yeah, that's... And I believe Eyes was the one with Mr. Insane there with the scar.
Yes.
Yeah, I did not like that one.
Barry Insane or something like that, his name, wasn't it?
Very Insane, yeah. Harry Benzane, whatever it was. Yes.
Don't take the McKee out of my name.
Exactly. That's the guy. And then for my decent but could be better episodes, we've got And the Sky Full of Stars, Grail, The Quality of Mercy, By Any Means Necessary, and The Parliament of Dreams.
Yeah, very good.
And then there's like five or six other ones that are just in there somewhere.
So, Dan, have you got a top five or a top three or a worst? Three?
Shadows and Portents is top. That's top for me, because even though there are other episodes that might lean into more of the backstory and the interweaving stories and everything like that, it's a self-contained episode. You could watch it just on its own, appreciate everything about Babylon 5, and then you realize when you rewatch it, knowing other things and other arcs that are to come, there's so much more going on. There are so many throwaway lines you think are not essential to the plot that will mean so much more in season 2 and 3 and 4. So Signs of Portents as a episode that stands on its own, as well as being part of the overarching arc, is always going to be my top. Into the Wilderness, Babylon Squared, again, same list for Sean there. Yeah, everybody knows what my bottom is. I'm not even going to say the letters. I don't even be reminded of that one. Believers. I feel like I was unfair on Believers, but it's still not one of my favorites.
No, that's it wasn't good.
That's another one where it's an episode in and of its own right and still has literally nothing else to offer when you rewatch, having watched the rest of the season.
It has nothing to do with anything other than to show how Franklin is too super self-righteous.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
As much as I love Franklin, again, Franklin is really important when I think about how I became an atheist and I moved away from sort of the C of E church upbringing that I had. There were speeches that I remember in my head that Franklin has about faith and how you don't necessarily need belief. You can just, put your faith in reason and things like this. That's really important. But rewatching him, could not stand him for season one. Such an arrogant a-hole.
Least favorite character of season one.
Yeah.
Just terrible. He does get better in my mind, but season one was not my favorite. Infection, I can kind of give a pass because there's a sort of allusion to the shadows. And again, you had Ilya Kuryakin himself. You had a guest star who I really had like a nostalgia feeling for. So again, I'm giving it an unfair pass when other episodes probably should be bringing it down. But all the other episodes are good, but you need them only to cement some of the storylines. There are three really great ones, three really bad ones, and then everything else in between for me.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, we'll start with the worst ones. My worst one is Believers. Just like I say, it is a standalone. It does nothing at all. Franklin is a great doctor. His character is a really damn good doctor. The trouble is, he believes he's God, and although that's what doctors are supposed to be, because we go to them to fix things that we can't do. There is an arrogance there that doesn't work for me, but then again, that's the actor being a very good actor. He's making you not like him, because that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So nothing wrong with it with the actor at all. It's just the character. What else have I got? I've got some of the early ones. Soul Hunter. I think I was a bit harsh on that because it was the first one we were watching, or one of the first ones we were watching. And I had nothing to base it against. I gave it a low score, but actually I do like that one.
Me too.
Born to the Purple is good because I love the scene of the Malari on the table. That was really good. So the worst one, Believers. I think generally my scores get higher as we go to the end of the season. So a lot of the early ones, Infection, I wasn't too fussed on. It was okay, I suppose. Mind War was not brilliant for me. But if we go into like the positives, a lot more positives at the back end. We've got, you know, incredibly, we've got Chrysalis, which I think is an amazing show, season ending cliffhanger. Legacies was right behind that. I thought that was good. Babylon Squared is a great one. Eyes, I love Eyes, not because of what happens inside it, but although they do make a lot of callbacks to the season, you know, that's just, you know, the show's up to then. He's questioning Sinclair about, you know, the shows that he's done in the past, you know, any little decision he's made, it's every one of them is questioned. So yeah, that's good. But the actor who plays Ari Benzane is just great. I absolutely love that. I'd watch that over and over again just for him. I think it's so, so funny. Signs and Portents, I think, is phenomenal. As you say, Dan, that's just, if you do this with your Temporal Trek podcast, you say, can this show be watched by a Babylon 5, let's say, fan, or can somebody who's not a Babylon 5 fan come and watch this? And the answer is yes, you can put it to both people. The fans will love it. People who haven't seen it before will get what's going on. They will suddenly see, you know, this, you know, there's a huge thing going on here. So it's a good one to bring people into. The War Prayer I thought was good, and Parliament of Dreams was good. So Death Walker, I love Death Walker because of the moral question it brings up at the end, and I love the actress who played the alien. She is not only just an amazing actress anyway, because she played in Superman 2, wasn't it? She played the female bad guy. But I just love the way she is so ruthless and clinical in what she believes is right. You know, and she's, you know, laughs at the humans to say, you know, if you want to live forever, you're going to have to kill your kids. So, you know, it was good. I like that one. So yeah, but overall, I think as the season goes along, I think in general, I can see looking at our scores that we've given here and with IMDb scores, it does get better as you get to the end of the season. People's appreciation goes up as the season goes on. And I think that's because they move away from Alien of the Week and, oh, it's my friend from so long ago. Oh, and here's another friend from so long ago. Oh, no, here's my great friend that I haven't seen for 2 years now. I want to get married to her, and, you know, move on. We move on from them and get into, and here we build up to what's going to be the rest of the year, the rest of the seasons, the rest of the show. Now we're talking. Now we're getting somewhere, and the scores, you know, for everybody go up. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to season two.
Who was the most favourable of the three of us towards the season? Would you know?
Yes. I don't want to say the end of the season, but at the moment, Dan, you're giving your average for all of the shows that have just been 3.2.
Dan is average. I like that. I'll put that on a t-shirt.
Sean is 3.4, and I'm a 3.5. IMDb is 3.7, which is interesting. And our total average between the three of us is 3.4. So we're a little bit lower than IMDb. Okay. We're all within touching distance. I'm a little bit more positive than you guys, and Dan's a little bit lower. Sean's the average. You know,
I'm just waiting for the boom. I'm always waiting for the boom.
And speaking of tomorrows, should we tell the listeners that we're going to take a few weeks off between seasons?
Yes, we are. Good point there, Sean. So what we've done is we've caught up on ourselves slightly here with some of the recordings. So we're basically editing them and putting it out almost within a few days of each other. So what we're going to do is, well, at the end of this episode, we're going to take 2 weeks off, and then we will be back with new theme tune and you know, season two full of new characters, new actors, and hopefully a really good season to look forward to. It does not mean, however, that we're going to stop recording, because we're going to continue to record every, was it 2 weeks? Is it?
How many?
Two weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. So we will hopefully give ourselves a little bit of a buffer, so that if for any reason that we don't record in the middle of a week somewhere, like, for example, me going on holiday at the end of the month, we've got some shows in the bank that we can put out while I'm away. So there we go. So that's it. So join us in, well, 3 weeks' time, probably. 1, 2, 3. We will have a whole new theme tune to start with.
So if you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send us some feedback at theepsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search Facebook for The Epsilon 3. So that is the end of this episode.
End.
Lights and good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.